Good afternoon, everyone. I think it's officially afternoon now, and I know it's also lunchtime, so thanks for sticking around. I appreciate it. My name is Jennifer Woodyard, and I'm a second-year master's student at Purdue University in Indiana, and today I'll be talking to you about cover crops and no-till and how they affect soil health indicators across a growing season. So as we've learned today through the session, cover crops are being used for many different purposes, but a term that keeps coming up is soil health. So people want to know how cover crops can impact soil health and improve it, but what does that really mean? I think there's a lot of uncertainty surrounding soil health and how to define it and how to measure it. And something that's become popular recently also are commercial soil health tests. So now anyone can send soil to a lab, either a private or university lab, and they will give you back soil health results. And there's also uncertainty surrounding these tests because different labs measure things different ways, and what does that mean and how do we interpret it? So we have a larger project going on in Indiana with multiple farmer sites using these commercial soil health tests, and a question that kept coming up was, is there a certain sample time that would allow us to detect real differences with these commercial soil health tests? So the rationale of this study was to try and answer that question and see if there was a particular time where we could actually see differences in the soil. And so we also, while picking those sampling times, we're trying to think about sampling convenience for farmers, just when is a practical time, because if farmers are actually doing this, we want it to be practical and useful. So we did this study on three sites in Indiana, and the first one is Dan DeSutter. He is a farmer in West Central Indiana, and these plots were established in 2013 in a randomized complete block design. So there are eight main plots here, and there are four applications of two treatments, which are cover crop plus no tillage, and then no cover crop plus no tillage. And Dan is in a corn, soybean, wheat rotation. So of the 4 years since his plots were established, three of those years had cover crop and one had wheat. Dan also just began the transition to organic this year, so keep that in mind as we go throughout this. And then Dan also has a neighbor who we call his conventional neighbor. He is in a no cover crop plus rotational tillage system in a corn soybean rotation, so he tills before corn. And it is in a separate field, as you can see from the plot diagram here. The second site is at Southeast Purdue Ag Center, as we refer to as CPAC. It's in southeastern Indiana, and it's a modified split plot design that was established in 2012. So this is a drone image looking down on the plots. There are three replications. The whole unit is cash crop, so there are corn and soybeans, and then there are three cover crop treatments before each cash crop. So before corn, we have a no cover, an oat radish mix, and an oat radish crimson clover cereal rye mix. And then before soybean, we have a no cover, a cereal rye, and an oat radish cereal rye mix. And as those cash crops rotate, the respective cover crop treatments also rotate with the color boxes around them. The final site is what we refer to as New DTC, which is on Purdue's main research farm in Acre, which is at West Lafayette, Indiana. So these plots were established in 2016 in a randomized complete block design, and there are four replications of three treatments, which are no cover, oats, and a 14-way cover crop mix. So our methods behind this were that we picked five sampling timings beginning in April 2017 and ending in October 2017. Actually, just last Friday, we collected our last samples. We took 25 soil probes from a 0 to 10 centimeter depth, avoiding the cash crop and cover crop root zones per plot. And this bucket down here shows what that would look like. We combined those 25 plugs and mixed them together to create one composite sample. We then separated that sample and shipped it to two commercial soil health labs. The first was Cornell University, where they analyzed our soil for active carbon and soil respiration using the 96-hour method. And then we also sent to University of Missouri's Soil Health Assessment Center, where they did a phospholipid fatty acid analysis for us. And today from that PLFA, I'll be talking about arbuscular mycorrhizae, or AMF, total microbial biomass, actinobacteria, and protozoa. And for this presentation, site and date were analyzed separately. So to give you an idea of the times, the first timing was in April when we sampled. The cover crop was still growing at this time. At timing two was in May. This was either pre-plant or in the early growth stages of the cash crop. Timing three corresponds with that larger project that we're doing in Indiana. So this was a time when we always sampled every year. So we wanted to maintain that timing for comparisons. So this was approximately V3 to V6 growth stage in corn. The fourth timing was in July, or approximately R1 in corn or tasseling. And then timing 5 was post cash crop harvest, late September or October. And I will only be presenting on the first four timings because we don't have the results from timing 5 yet. So to give you an idea of what things looked like, I'm going to mostly focus on the DeSutter site because that's where we saw the most significant differences, and just for time's sake as well. So that the first timing, you can see that the top picture is showing the cereal rye. That was his cover crop that Dan had growing this year, so it was about 2 feet tall. And then this is the bottom picture is the no-cover plot. So remember that Dan was switching to organic, so he did not use any chemicals to control weeds this year, so he was relying solely on the cereal rye. So the bottom picture is showing the no-cover plot, and you can see there's a few weeds, but it's not too bad. By timing 2 in May, you can see that things really took off. So I'm pretty average height, so that cereal rye is pretty tall, I'd say. And the picture on the right is the no-cover plot, so a few more weeds, but still not too bad. By the third timing in June, Dan had roller crimped his cereal rye and drilled soybeans into it. So there was about a 4-inch thick mat of cereal rye there on the left picture. The no-cover plot's in the middle, so a few more weeds. And then the conventional neighbor is on the right, so he also planted soybeans this year, and they were just emerging at this time. And by timing 4, you can see that things really took off. So on the right side of this picture is the no-cover. You can see that there are much more weeds than on the left side of the picture where that cereal rye mat was. All right, to get into the results, so I'm going to focus on active carbon from Cornell first. So active carbon is the carbon in the soil that's readily available for microbes to consume as an energy source. This first graph is showing the cover crop versus the no cover crop plots. So this was analyzed as an ANOVA. The four dates are across the x-axis on the bottom, and the units are in milligrams of carbon per kilogram of soil on the y-axis. So you can see that at timing 3, cover crop was significantly higher at a value of a level of 0.1. The second graph is showing the cover crop versus the conventional neighbor. So this was analyzed as a t-test because the conventional neighbor was in a separate field. The same dates on the bottom and the same units on the side, and you can see that the last three timings had significantly higher values for cover crop at a level of 0.05 compared to the conventional. And then I analyzed the no-cover versus the conventional, so this was also done as a t-test, and you can see that the no-cover was significantly higher than the conventional neighbor at all four timings. Next, we'll talk about soil respiration from Cornell. So soil respiration is the amount of carbon dioxide that the microbes are giving off as they're consuming that carbon in the soil. And these graphs are set up the same way. So the four dates are across the bottom, and now the units on the y-axis are milligrams of CO2 per gram of soil. So the top left graph comparing the cover crop to the no cover, we did see significant differences at the first three timings. The top right graph comparing cover crop to conventional, we saw significant differences at all four timings where cover crop was significantly higher. And the bottom middle graph, we saw that no cover was significantly higher than the conventional at timings 1 and 4. So now to get into those PLFA results from Missouri, phospholipid fatty acids are present in all living cell membranes, but they decompose quickly when cells die, so they're a good indicator of the living microbial community that's in the soil at the time of sampling. So we did see on the top left graph that in cover crop, we saw significantly higher amounts of AMF compared to the no cover at the last three timings. The top right graph, we saw that cover crop was always significantly higher than conventional, and no cover was also always significantly higher than the conventional neighbor. So these are three other parameters from that PLFA analysis: total microbial biomass, actinobacteria, and protozoa. This table is analyzed the same way as the graphs I just showed you, with the dates across the top and the three comparisons on the side. If there are letters, that means that that's a significant treatment, and then the level is signified by either a star or a cross. So first, I want to draw your attention to the cover crop versus the no-cover comparison. You can see that about 50% of the time, cover crop was significantly higher than the no-cover crop in all three of these parameters. Next, we'll look at the cover crop versus the conventional neighbor. So for total microbial biomass and actinobacteria, at all four timings, cover crop was significantly higher than the conventional neighbor. But for protozoa, it was only at the last timing. And then what's interesting here in the no-cover versus conventional neighbor is that protozoa was actually significantly higher in the conventional neighbor compared to the no-cover for the first three timings. And those protozoa values also were transformed. And I want to show you pictures from the other two sites to maybe give you an idea of why we didn't see as many significant differences here. So CPAC in April, you can see this is, we have decent growth of weeds and cover crop both. But by May, the cover crop had already been terminated and the cash crop was growing. So if you remember back to that DeSutter picture, at this time, that was when the seal rye was as tall as me. So lots of good growth in here. The cover crop was already terminated. By timing three, the cash crop was growing and it was between those V3 to V6 stages as we planned. And by timing four, the corn was tasseling and the beans were in reproductive stages. At the new DTC site, this is where we had three different treatments of oats, 14-way mix, and no cover. So the oats winter killed, as did most of the 14-way mix, except for some clover, and we had a pretty mild winter in Indiana, so some radish grew back in the spring. And then, of course, we always have a decent covering of weeds in the no-cover plot. By timing two, the plots had received a burn down with herbicides, so things are starting to die off in the 14-way mix and the no-cover plots. And by timing three, you can see that the cash crop has been planted, and residue amounts kind of appear to be less across all three of the treatments. By timing four, the corn was in late vegetative stages, and the picture on the right looks in on one of the oat plots, so you can see that that thick residue that was there in April appears to be much less at this time. So this table is showing the two sites, CPAC and UDTC, and their four timings, and then the six variables that I talked about today across the top. And then it's showing what is significant at those timings for that particular variable. So you can see that we didn't really see as many significant things, like I said, at these two sites, and especially at new DTC, we didn't see any significance across all of these variables. So conclusions from this are that results varied by site. CPAC and UDTC had fewer significant differences than DeSutter. At CPAC, I think part of this could be because we didn't see as much growth from the cover crop as at DeSutter, and it was terminated earlier. New DTC also, this was its first year in cover crop, and didn't have much growth in the spring because the treatments winter killed. So no particular timing stood out for detecting differences in the soil health parameters across all three sites, but specifically at DeSutter, we did see that it was easier to detect differences when you were comparing the cover crop to the conventional and the no cover to the conventional than when you were comparing the cover crop to the no cover. So this kind of shows that it's harder to tell what cover crops add to a no-till system at times, but it's easier to see what a conservation practice can add to a conventional neighbor. But however, what was really interesting about this was that at the third sampling time specifically, we were able to detect a significant difference in the cover crop versus the no cover in every variable that I presented here. So that means that timing could have potential to actually be able to detect real differences that might be more subtle when you add cover crops to a no-till system. Quickly, I'd like to thank our funders and all the people who helped me sample and the people who manage these sites and Dan for letting us use his site as well. So thank you. So it depends on what you want to do. Since we only chose two parameters from Cornell, it was $20 a piece, so it was $40 for us to get these analyzed. And then I think the PLFA was maybe around $50 per sample. So this is a per sample basis. Yeah. So. Anybody else? Yeah.
Dan, the center has been using cover crops for a while. Could you comment on how that
Sure. Yeah, so Dan has also actually been in a no-till system since the 80s, and then he started using cover crops, I believe, on this field right around when this study started. So it's interesting because the CPAC site has also been using cover crops about the same amount of time, but Dan is in really good soils, high organic matter, and I think that could contribute to it as well. But yeah, definitely, I mean, using cover crops for that long adds to the potential of the soil to show us these results. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.